The following is a presentation of Second City Works, delivered by your earbuds at WGN+.
Welcome to Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. I'm Kelly Leonard, creative advisor for the Second City. We are brought to you by Second City Works, which is the B2B arm of the world-famous Second City Theater. You can find us at secondcityworks.com. And this is more than just a podcast. It's about getting to the yes and moment in your work and your life. The term yes and is a key pillar of improvisation. It's at the front end of creativity. It's about building on ideas and making discoveries together. This is Getting to Yes And.
Working all day for a mean little man with a clip on tie and a rub on tan. He's got me running around the office like a dog around a track. But when I get back home, you're always there to rub my back.
My guest today on Getting to Yes And is Catherine Twells. Kathy has worked at Coca-Cola for over 20 years, where she started as an account executive and then worked her way up to assistant vice president customer marketing throughout the Western United States. She is responsible for leading a team of innovative marketers that foster strong customer relationships for Coca-Cola. Profiled in Marcus Buckingham's bestseller, Go Put Your Strengths to Work, she is a respected authority in her field. She is passionate about leadership development and hosts the annual CMO Summit for the Coca-Cola Company that engages external CMOs in conversations with thought leaders on key marketing trends and opportunities for growth. Kathy, welcome to Getting to Yes And.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So one of the things that we have in common is that we have both spent almost our entire adult careers with the same company, me with Second City and you with Coca-Cola. And that's something that's become exceedingly rare in business. But one of the positives of being with a company, I think, for that long is the ability to tell the brand story over time. And I wonder, how important is storytelling in your job?
It is everything. It is everything in my job. And when you think about it, Kelly, and I agree with you, it is a rarity to be with an organization so long these days. But what I find with storytelling is our brains we're wired for that. It's how we understand what we're doing. And for Coca-Cola, it's really unique.
Yeah.
Because people have a relationship with our brand, right? It dates back to all different experiences, different groups, different countries, and it's thriving today, but it's got a very, very long history.
Yeah, I mean, and so many aspects of the Coca-Cola brand are iconic. The bottle, the shape of the bottle is something that's fascinating, and sort of, so you have tactile stuff, but then you've got the commercials, right, that people remember that are, you know, I mean, it was the ending of Mad Men. I mean, it was about Coke. There's a great Hannah Arendt quote, which is, "Storytelling reveals meaning without committing the error of defining it." And I like that because it suggests that the best stories allow the audience to play a big part in providing the meaning of the story. And I think Coca-Cola has done that really well for a long period of time.
Well, and you brought up Hilltop ad, and if you don't mind, do you mind if I share a bit of a story about that?
Oh, I'd love it.
So contrary to the Mad Men ending was fantastic, and that was a total surprise to us, by the way, that they decided to go that route.
Right.
But there's a real story behind this, and I think sometimes with storytelling, people think that there can be a level, especially with marketing, where it's contrived. But the most powerful stories are authentic and real and amazing, right? They tell the story of life.
Yeah.
And with the Hilltop ad, there's a story that a lot of people don't even know about the origin and how this came about. But basically, Bill Backer, who was the creative director on our account for McCann Erickson, was traveling to London. So this was back in January of 1971.
Mm-hmm.
He was traveling to London to join some other songwriters to actually arrange some commercials for a company. But what happened is the fog was so heavy at Heathrow Airport that they were forced to land in Ireland. And they had this small little town, Shannon Airport, and the passengers had to share rooms in one hotel or they had to sleep at the airport. So needless to say, they were uptight, there were tensions, tempers were running high, everyone was in a bad mood. Well, the next morning, as the passengers gathered in the coffee shop and they were waiting clearance to fly back, Bill Back noticed that several who had been amongst the most irate were now laughing, and they were sharing stories over a bottle of Coke. And the thing that came to him when he thought about this ad was this basic idea to see Coke not as it was originally designed to be, this liquid refreshment, but as this tiny bit of commonality between all people, this thing that we could share, actually keep company in. And that's what so amazing about a brand, you might think, well, it's a product, but it really represents so much more in the consumer's mind.
I love that story also because I was talking to someone the other day about storytelling, and I sort of said to them, I go, what great story is about everything going well? Like, our best stories are usually about something going not well, just like that one, right? Yeah. And you, that's where you make your discoveries. It's
absolutely.
Yeah, so fascinating. I read that a few years back, Coca-Cola declared that they were killing the press release as a way to cut through the noise. Did that really happen?
You know, what was different, I would articulate that as a shift in how we thought about it. Because
okay.
I go back to my comment about, is it contrived? Is the press release designed in a way that everything has to be communicated in a certain fashion, in a certain format? Where we really moved to understanding, especially in the digital age, is that we're in a conversation. We're in a conversation with our consumers. They have a relationship with us. And by the way, it's moment by moment. Now with social media, anything that happens across the world, we can actually be in conversation around it. So the level of authenticity, of really telling who we are and responding in real time, is what's changed. And press releases are something that takes time. Now we need to be present to the moment every day.
Yeah, well, you have to be improvisers, because, I mean, that is the essence of improvisation, is that it's an art form that is created in conversation with the audience minute by minute. And that's one of the things, I think we've talked about this before, because Kathy and I met at that CMO summit and got into some great conversations. But, it's amazing to wake up one day and the art form that you've been working on that's been around since 1959 is suddenly more relevant than it ever has been because of its transactional nature. Between audience and performer, and that we do a lot of that work now because people recognize they need to be agile and they need to pivot in the moment. And the other thing that comes out of our work from the comedy side, I think more than the improv side, is that sense of authenticity, which is really about building your own voice, not trying to speak in another person's voice. And I think when you see marketing go haywire, it's when brands try to be something that they're not.
It really is. And as we talk about community or we get into what we're doing with our storytelling, what we've really seen is that we have got to understand what the consumers want from us. So it's not about us sitting in a room and saying, this is what we're going to be and this is how it's going to go down.
Right.
We have to listen.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be completely present to what's the consumer saying? What's changing in their lives? What's changing in the world? How do we respond to that? How do we be present to evolving our own organization to something that's entirely new? And we've been around for over 125 years. And we're dealing with a very different situation than a startup who's just creating who they are now. We have to reinvent ourselves all the time. And the only way we do that is by being engaged with our consumers and knowing what they need.
Yeah, and we're not naturally good listeners, us human beings. I'd suggest brands are even worse often at listening as you extend that out. So that it takes real practice to because you're listening not just to hear the words that are being said, but what's underneath the words, listening for intent.
Absolutely, and you have to balance it because on one hand, we're trying to develop long-term plans.
Yeah.
And you want to set goals, you want to set a path for where you're going, but you have to know that you cannot be rigid in that path. You have to be able to deviate. And, of course, this is the nature of improvisation, and what you have lived your entire life is you know where you want to go, but you can't be attached
right
to where you want to go. You have to be able to move and shape with what changes.
Yeah, you have to play the scene that you're in, not the scene you want to be in.
Absolutely. It's all about, we want to control, but we have to let go of that at some point and trust that if we have the right core values, the right team, the right co-creation, we're going to get where we need to be.
So speaking of values, do you guys play around with mission-driven marketing?
We definitely do. And this is such a passion point for me because when we started this conversation talking about storytelling.
Yeah.
And there are so many more stories of Coca-Cola that haven't even been told really around our mission.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I did a couple years ago is led a project to talk to visionary entrepreneurs, to startups, about what it was like to really live in a mission-based culture. How does that drive you? How does that change what you do? And how do we take the learnings from that and bring it into a corporate situation where we've been around for a very long time? We have a lot of constituents to manage.
Yeah.
And what I find is that the most powerful thing that can drive all of us is really understanding why we're doing what we're doing. And Simon Sinek talked about this a lot. What is our why?
Mm-hmm.
Not just what is the product, not just what's the business plan, but why do we do what we do? And with Coca-Cola, there's so much that we're doing across the world, whether it's empowering women in our 5x20 empowerment program, creating clean water, promoting well-being, taking care of communities in Nepal, providing scholarships, working with the military, working with youth. It's phenomenal. So we feel that our mission is so large, but there's more to be told about it.
Yeah, Simon Sinek had this quote. It was, customers will never love a company until the employees love it first. And yeah, and I mean, and you have a passion for your own company that is contagious and unique. And I would suppose that's the thing that you want to foster in those people that you're mentoring, because you're a mentor, right? Especially your length of within the company. I think that's very important to you.
Well, I think everything starts with passion. You've got to be rooted in doing something that you feel like you were called to do, and that does have a greater sense of purpose. Because I would say for so many of us, it's not necessarily for us about the liquid refreshment, going back to the Hill story.
Yeah.
But it is this ability to touch a brand that is in over 200 countries, mm-hmm. that has 500 different brands, that has the scale and ability to affect change. And we've been talking about authenticity. You know, when you go back into our history, whether it's the Hilltop ad, some of the things that we did in the 60s around segregation, statements that we've made around the culture mm-hmm. of our country, we authentically desire to create sustainable communities, to unite people. And when you think about, I'd like to teach the world to sing,
yeah.
it was about uniting the world. And in so many ways, as a company, that is what we do and what so many of us as employees believe in, which is so much further than just the product. It's everything that we stand for.
Yeah, I was looking up Coke facts, I saw that people in 200 countries are drinking 1.9 billion servings of Coca-Cola every day. I mean, that the scale of that is incredible. And especially when you put that up against the sort of day-to-day work that you have to do. And you have a great quote that I read online that said, an important part of my job is to serve those I work with. And I just love that, because it puts the emphasis as a leader on your ability to make others look good, which is a total improv thing.
Well, improv talks about, follow the followers. Mm-hmm. And, at Coca-Cola, we've even started this millennial mentor program where we're listening to the next generation. Because we know we have to change the way we think, and we need to understand differently. But I do believe, from a leadership standpoint, it is the ultimate co-creation, and especially when you lead leaders.
Yeah.
Because you have got to understand, where everyone is coming from, what their unique talents and gifts are to bring into the problem, and how to actually create something together that is so much bigger and better than any one of us could create alone. And that is about service. It is not about power. It is about co-creation and service.
Yeah, and that's relatively, that's new in terms of the way, at least, popular culture observes leadership. Because I was looking at, and I was reading a lot on your philosophy about this, because it's out there in some of the books. You said leadership is an art you work on daily. And that made me think that really we'd be wise to consider leadership as a practice rather than a position.
I think that is so beautifully stated, Kelly. It is a practice. And what I find, I find myself on a daily basis being in conversation with one of my directors. And we'll be tackling, it could be a customer issue, it could be a team issue. And I'll be rooted in one spot of where I think it needs to be. And they'll come up with something else. And together we go down this pathway that is so beautiful, because we create something so different. And that is artful.
Yeah.
It is artful to understand how different people are motivated, What makes them want to get up in the morning? What is their why? Why are they doing what they do? And how do we actually bring them forward into their fullest potential, not just for the company, but in their lives?
Right.
I mean, to really be their best selves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the power. We talk about ensembles at Second City over teams, simply because the team word can feel competitive, you know, in sort of a sports environment. And when you think about ensembles, they exist forever, right? Different people come in and out of ensembles, but the ensemble is there. And I think that that's a sort of a refreshing way to look at it. And you know, and this mentorship idea is also so vital, because I think that we were talking to Sidney Finkelstein, who has written a new book called Superbosses about leadership. And it, the big sort of common theme is that the thing that unites all these different leaders, and it can be, you know, Larry Ellison from Oracle and Alice Waters from Chez Panisse, who share nothing in common except for the fact that they both are run a leadership model that is thriving with mentorship. And they want their people to succeed and even leave. And then, you know, spread the gospel and then bring in new people. And it strikes me that that's something that you feel passionate about as well.
Oh, I'm so passionate about that, because when you have people coming into a place of work and really understanding that there is this mission, and the ensemble, you know, to use the improv word, mm-hmm. understands that they're all working towards this greater mission, and on the way to that mission, they can find greatness within themselves. You have to create the space and the framework for those individuals to know that they can trust.
Yeah.
They can feel vulnerable. You know, people don't like to talk about vulnerability in business. I love Brené Brown's work and the fact that she talks about how this enters into this amazing arena about courage.
Yeah.
You know, courage and vulnerability means you're going to put everything in it. And if you create a space for people to come in and actually do that, and they know they've got their back, and they know that you're listening and present to it, then it can be magic.
Yeah, well, because we need to teach resilience. And the only way you can teach resilience is allowing people to fail and then get back up again. And that gets tricky inside a business. You know, so we often sort of talk about where is your failure module? Where is the safe space for your people to fail so they can experience it and recognize that it happens all the time? Because it does. The most successful people are failing constantly.
If you're not failing, you're not pushing your edge. And a lot of people have talked about this. But I think it's one of the challenges that a larger corporation like ours has been around for a long time faces compared to maybe a startup that is moving at such a different pace and speed, and the dynamics and the chemistry of that startup can be very different. We actually are trying to cultivate more of a startup mentality within our company. We believe great things can come from it. But when you talk about mentorship or feedback or teams, it's one thing to create an amazing tribe when everyone's clicking, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But you also have to ask yourself the question, are you too comfortable? You know, and is there enough of pushing that edge to come into new thinking and new ideas and to do things a little bit differently? And as a leader, you need to make sure that you find people that will tell you exactly how they really feel, not what they think, you know, you want to hear, but what they really feel. And if you can bring that out, that's where you co-create to a new level.
Okay, this is perfect, because I want to talk to you about feedback, and it comes from a conversation we've been having basically in the last 2 weeks at the Second City Works office, because we're looking at designing some new stuff. So I'm going to try something out on you, an idea out on you. One of the first feedback rules that we have at Second City is that people need to take the note, and that means you don't fight the note or argue the note. You just take the note. Now, this doesn't mean you have to agree with the note or even act on the note. Mutual understanding is that the note is a suggestion, and if you have another way to be successful, that's fine. And I think most companies would benefit if everyone looked at a take of the note philosophy. And by the way, this feedback model is completely transferable to parenting. I've done it with my kids over and over again. But I wonder what you thought about that, of like, just take the note.
it sounds phenomenal, and I feel like what's so interesting about leadership is you get into psychology. I mean, everything's psychology, right? We're living our own realities based on the experiences in our lives. And so when I think about the situations I've been in where I've either had to give feedback or receive it, the ability to take the notes and to be able to stop and not go into defense or explanation or all the things you need to do. Talk about a practice. I mean, earlier you mentioned leadership is a practice. That is a practice to be able to say, I'm going to receive this, and I'm not going to react. I'm going to respond in due time after I really understand what it means.
Yep. And I think, you know, and it's the responsibility of not just the employee, but the employer to have everyone understand the ground rules around take the note. Right. I mean, we're not, you know, in the beginning improv classes, we are giving notes that you need to take to get more successful because we know there's experts working with novices. But as you, you know, it changes. Right. Note giving changes as you experience more and more time inside a company. And at the highest functioning level, which is our main stage, that's where the take the note thing, you know, it needs to be an art form because it will slow everything down if you move into defense mode. And vice versa, if you're a leader and you're telling people like, no, you need to do it this way, you are not you're doing nothing positive for your people because then you might as well have a robot because these people need to bring their creativity into make something together better.
Absolutely. And it really links back to some of the conversation we had a moment ago around this culture of trust and vulnerability. Because before you even embark upon take note, if the people that you're working with, if your ensemble knows that your intention is for their highest good and that there is trust and where you're going and what the mission is, it's so much easier to take the note. If there's any toxicity, if there's a question of agenda, then the whole thing derails. So you have to have your culture set before you can even go to that next space.
Yeah. Well, so the other thing then that everyone needs to have is empathy. Again, it seems to me that used to be a dirty word in business that is now gaining some steam because I think it is absolutely essential to every single thing we've talked about with regard to listening to your audience, mentoring your people, becoming a better leader, is this need to be empathetic, to understand that our view of the world is just our view. We don't know the person sitting across from us as much as we'd like to think we know what they're thinking. We don't. And so true empathy provides an opportunity for really true discovery, I think.
Well, and you're really pointing to emotional intelligence. And there's been a lot written on emotional intelligence for the past several years and the importance of it versus just our intellect and our strategy, but the ability to understand and connect. And it's really quite remarkable when you think about how unique our experiences are, our value set, what's happened in our lives, how we see things. There are some days it's amazing we even communicate at all.
Yeah.
And you consider all the things that are coming into play. But There's these themes, you know, Kelly, that we keep returning to of presence, listening. Am I listening to understand? And it doesn't mean we're always on the same page, but I can try to understand your world and be able to respond very differently from that. So I think it's a critical skill for where we work now.
All right. So we're coming close to the end of our conversation, sadly. But I one question before I'm going to talk to you about a yes and story. How much Coke merch is in your house right now? Because I have at least 20 Second City hoodies hanging in my closet. I have like 7 hats and maybe 25 bags. I can't. And Second City is not like anywhere near Coke. What's the merch ratio at the Twells household?
You know, it's an excellent question, and truthfully, I tend to be a bit of a minimalist with that. I think when you surround yourself with it all day, but of course, mostly it's for my kids, you know, baseball caps and T-shirts and the occasional bobblehead, you know, someone here and there. So I definitely have it around, but I can tell you I don't actually have an active shrine or altar set up at the
I was imagining, like, in the garage, you know, that there might be, as the door ascends, just a world of Coke that you could, you know, experience.
Let's just say that people at my kids' school know who their mom's for.
Yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. And I actually recall in 1976 getting Coca-Cola pants, like bell-bottom pants. I think, you know, because my dad was a media guy, radio guy here at WGN, actually, and he used to get all this kind of merch, and then he just came home with all this Coca-Cola stuff. Those pants
were... I was really... Kelly, I would give anything to get a photo of you in those pants.
Yeah, well, it's not going to happen. I hope it's not going to happen. All right. So one of the things, the only thing we ask our guests to prepare or at least just think about is a yes and story, right? Or it could be a no story, but some point in your life or career where you might have normally said no and you said yes and, or the reverse. Do you have one of those stories for us?
I certainly do. And while there are so many moments, small moments of yes and that happen like every single day, because let's go back to this, it's a practice.
Yep.
But the thing that came up for me immediately when you mentioned, hey, we're gonna talk about this, is really the origin of how you and I met.
Yeah.
It was really around the CMO Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the CMO Summit began 6 years ago, and it was an idea by one of our leaders, really wonderful leader by the name of Brad Taylor. And he asked the question, what if we did this? What could it look like? And asked me to take on. Hmm. And of course, you have that initial, what is it going to take? How are we going to create this? As we started looking at the dynamic of bringing in several of our CMOs from different customers, we started asking the question, you know, how would they feel? Competitors in the same room? How's this going to go? Will they be trusting? Will they open? Will they be able to create community? And in the 6 years since the what if question was asked, we have gone down so many pathways with our CMOs. We have groups that have engaged from the beginning. We have people that join us every year, and it's really become something that is a community, and it's still evolving as we speak. But when I think about all the ideas we talk about with improv,
yeah,
with this practice and the ability to co-create and the ability just to improvise as you go, we've learned so much in the process, and it's really been beautiful to watch. So when you think about saying yes to something and you don't really know how it's going to play out, I have found certainly in this situation and others that I can think of that they've been the most exciting, most rewarding, and passionate journeys that you could ever go on.
That's fantastic. Kathy, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was really, really fun. I enjoyed the conversation.
Me too.
Well, I've been working in a coal mine.
This is Second City Works, getting to Yes And. You can find us at WGNplus.com. You can stream us on the WGN Plus app, or you can find us on iTunes. See you next week.